Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and I'm here with your other host,
Danny Hogan.
There was something I wanted to start off by talking about, and that is something I usually don't like talking about, Valentine's Day. I personally think it's a load of shit. I think it's this kind of marketing campaign, and I am aware of the irony that I go hard at Halloween and yet Valentine's I don't take seriously. But
really?
At least Halloween to me is like a dressing up holiday. Yeah, right from a young age, I took Halloween very seriously. No, really, you don't know the extent of it. So my birthday in August, the day after, would be when Halloween would start for me. And then that would continue until the Christmas decorations went up. I was a spooky kid. And so I love that. But no, Valentine's, it feels like a very pressured holiday, you know? I guess I've never had to explain it before. I think a lot of people just aren't here for it and they get what I mean.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean, Bob. I'm with you. Valentine's is like this pressure, this one-to-one type of pressure. Like it's all on you. It's not like you've got your you know, I don't know. It just feels like if you're not in that, I mean, I don't buy into that, so it doesn't bother me. But for others, it must be quite hard. You know, social media is just flooded with so many people, you know, showing off what they've had and what they do, and that's fine for them, like that, you know, no judgment, but just feels like, yeah, it's probably quite a hard time of year for others. Yeah, I'm not into it at all, although I did get Anthony a card this year because he gets me one and he wouldn't, but I think we're both in this is another joke, you know, we're both in that if I then don't get you one and you've got me one, it's a bit out of order. It's happened a couple of years.
I think that's probably what it comes down to for me. I'm not sure how much there is below the commercialisation.
100%. Because you love somebody, you connect to them. You don't need a day, a year, do you, to show them how much? And actually, to me, it's more cringy. Like, we're not going out to a restaurant. We probably did when we met 20 years ago, like for the first time. You know what I mean? The first Valentine's we had together. I do not want to go and sit in a restaurant with everybody else with these cliche couples at Valentine's with balloons and hearts. I just don't ever want that.
And I think that's part of the pressure of it as well, right? Because then you're all going to be lined up trying to outdo each other's dates, you know? And are you going to look over and be like, oh, well, she's got a bunch of roses and I don't? Fake laughing, trying to pretend you're having the most fun. That's the bit that really turns me off it. So I've actually, the same as you, I've done the cards and I've done the, like, let's spend the day together, but I can't say I've ever really celebrated it in a relationship. And that's a big part of it. It's that pressure of like, okay, you've got to be the perfect couple and you've got to show each other you love each other. It's like, well, I kind of want them to know that I love them every day of the year.
Yeah. We did a little thing because a girl saw me. We were shopping. I was with the kids a couple of days prior and there was cards. And I was like, oh, I saw a funny card. Like, I got him a funny card. Like, there's never like this long gushy. I mean, I hate gush anyway. I'm just not a gush person. I'm like, oh, it's embarrassing. It makes me cringe. But I said, I bought him a funny card. And the girls were with me and it was just more of a family. We said, oh, it's the day when people like, oh, I love you. You're my Valentine, you know, to my girls. Like, but even then, not really, because I don't want them growing up with it either. I just don't like it. And we might have listeners that are like, oh, I love Valentine's. And that's fine for them. We're not dissing it. We are a bit, to be honest, because we don't like it.
You know what? I'm open to it. If the listeners want to send us a DM, you can get me at Bobby Temps and tell me why you like it, because I would be fascinated to know. And I'm sure there are people that do really enjoy it, but maybe it's the same thing. It's like Christmas. You have to create your own routines around it. You have to find what it means to you. I don't know if the way it's marketed to us with all the buy roses and tiny little teddies and things, I don't know if that's quite engaging enough on its own. Maybe that's
absolutely it. Yeah, that's what it is, Bob. It's not engaging enough on its own. And also, I'm not a cliche romance person, and that's what it's all about. Romance comes to me in so many different ways. Cute little things are romantic to me that happen without even really thinking about it, or putting a bit of thought into something is romantic, rather than on a day thinking, oh, I'll buy her chocolates and flowers because that's what society say.
Ugh. And like the chocolates that you want to get her are sold out because every other fucker is buying them. Anyway, one thing I will tell you, because we've talked about the pressure of if you're in a relationship, what about if you're not? and you're seeing the date count down, and you've got your friends and relationships all talking about what they are going to do, whether they love it or whether they hate it. They've all got opinions on it. And you're just there like, oh, dear. And for me, the temptation is just to hide on the 14th of February. Just be like, I'm not getting involved at all. What I'm certainly not going to do is go to a restaurant on my own. I can tell you that much. If they'll even let you in, they're probably all booked up for months. But yeah, that kind of cookie cutter thing that can come with it. Yeah, generally, I just completely do my own thing. But one thing I did notice very intensely this year, the dating apps were going off.
Were they?
Yeah, so every year, actually, January is the peak month for dating anyway, because a lot of people, maybe they've been around their family, maybe they've not enjoyed being single around their family, I don't know. Certain amount of people have breakups, and then Valentine's looming, and do they want to get into a new relationship before that? So it can be quite a pressurized time. Not to mention, January can be quite a boring or difficult time for a lot of people. And so that maybe the distraction of dating is something that they really find something in. And so, yeah, for whatever combination of reasons, January is peak dating month. And I've definitely noticed that, which is interesting, because I've noticed in the other lockdowns, a lot of stuff has tailed off, or a lot of people are just looking around. They don't seem to be keen on chatting or whatever. Whereas this time, a lot of chatty people. And Kat was telling me she's even seen a lot of men putting on their profiles quite aggressive messages like, if you're not going to chat, don't even bother liking me, blah, blah, blah. If you don't text, if you don't message me within 24 hours, I'm going to delete you. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, last of the great romantics. But I don't know if I've told you this, as in my head, an investment in myself via this podcast, I purchased Tinder Gold when we started.
Oh,
and in hindsight, it makes as much sense as launching this podcast in the pandemic does, because I got it. And whilst it's very interesting, because I rationalized it right in my head, I wouldn't normally bother. But I was like, OK, well, you know, I'm in this situation where I need to like pay more attention to dating because I'm going to be talking about it more. And so I thought, why not? We're going to blow somebody on 3 months of this. And yeah, it's been a bit of an eye opener. One of the features it gives you is that you can see the people that have liked you. And that,
you see that on normal Tinder?
No, so you have to both like each other and then it comes up as a match.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Whereas on this, it'll show you the people that have liked you. And then obviously, if you like them back, if you swipe right on them, then that's an automatic match. If you swipe left, they're away, back into the pool. And I think on the surface of it, that seems quite useful. But I wonder if that maybe does more for people's ego. It gives me notifications of this many new people have liked you. And I'm like, oh, let's go. Yeah. Inspect them. I don't know if it necessarily leads to more conversations, because maybe you feel like you've got too many options then, and you sort of find yourself being like, oh, I'll just save up, we'll see what the next one's like.
Yeah.
And particularly in a pandemic, when, you know, with the restrictions as they are, I'm not really actively talking to anyone new. But coming up to Valentine's, getting a lot of likes went
really
off. And I guess that shows kind of how ingrained this is, because I don't really know if you would be going on a Valentine's walk with anybody in the cold.
No. But wait, do they know that you've got gold? Like, do you know somebody else has got gold? Because could that be a thing? So they don't know that you've got gold. So like, if you're...
No, I don't think so.
Would you as got into gold, then you might think, oh, they can see that I've liked them. I'm not sure I really want them to unless they like me. There's all these things just build up so much extra thought around how you interact, don't they?
You know what, that's part of it. I think it's the pressure, because I know if I like them, then we're going to match, and then there's some expectation of talking, and I'm not really talking to anybody new right now, and so that's part of it. So it kind of adds to this collectivism, whereas maybe if I didn't have that and I was just swiping as normal, you just swipe away because you're like, well, I don't know how many of these are actually going to come back.
Yeah, I'd love to go on Tinder. It sounds like, I'm sure I've said this on the pod before, like when I've said it to him, he looks at me as if to say, what the hell is that supposed to mean to your boyfriend? Like, why would you say that to your man that you want to go on Tinder? But obviously it's not because I want to find someone, but I just, you know, feel like I'm out there in the cold. Like, I need to get involved just to be able to to know what. In fact, I might have just gone for research purposes, but then it's hilarious because if you all your friends are on here and people that you know, and then suddenly you pop up on Tinder, my phone would go off. Everyone would be like, when did you split up with Anne? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? So it's a bit of a dead end for me.
And the thing is, you're saying out in the cold, but I think we've talked about it before. It's cold in here too.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's that kind of grass is greener mentality. There's always other things we aspire to. But that kind of leads on to actually a little bit of the main thing we were going to talk about today, which is attachment styles in adult relationships. Because this kind of actually links to a lot of realizations I've had about dating for me, and also the kind of sense of independence that I hold very close to my heart that can sometimes cause issues relationship wise. So if people aren't familiar, they might be familiar with the idea of attachment types in children. So if you've done, for me, it was like even from A-level psychology, this was covered a little bit. So the idea of attachment styles in babies and infants. But it's only in 2010 when the first book about how these attachment styles apply within adults and particularly romantic relationships apply. And so I've recently read that. It's called Attached by Amir Levine and Rachel Heller. And it's a fascinating book. It's really, really popular. And I'm trying to read more relationship books at the moment. It's really interesting to me. This one has kind of blown my mind a little bit. It's got me rethinking a lot. And so I've got a test here, which gives you a pretty strong indication on which type you are, particularly depending how highly you score. So before I talk about the different types, are you up for doing this test?
So up for it. I love things like this. Yeah, I just love it. As much you read into it, as much or as little as you want to. But I love these kind of things. Anything with a quiz or a test or looking at yourself, anything like that, love it.
So our listeners can also play along if they want to try this. Just get a piece of paper. I'll explain all the rest. And basically, I'm going to go through statements. And for each one, there's a corresponding letter. So if you put A, B and C, you ready to do this?
Yeah, do I need a piece of paper then?
Yeah, looking at me blankly.
Hold on.
And if anyone's into ASMR, they can hear us scratching away with our pencils.
Yeah, sorry, you might want to just let me just get... I'm just a bit annoyed because I've got paper coming out of my ears and I've not got my pad with me. I've always got my pad with me. It's because I'm upstairs. What have I got? Oh, there's the Valentine's card that's going to get recycled. Maybe I'll use that. It's a bit out of order. I'm not using that. Let me find a piece of paper. Hold on, Bobs. Okay.
All right, so on your piece of paper, you want to put A, B and C. And for each of the statements that I read out, there'll be a corresponding letter. And if that statement is true for you, it doesn't have to be perfectly true. If that's mostly true of what you're like in relationships or dating, then you put a tick or a tally, I guess, next to that corresponding letter.
Right.
And then at the end, the split to which your tallies are will indicate your attachment style.
Okay, so I guess you've done this for yourself already, right?
I've done it and I have a pretty strong leaning, put it that way.
Yeah, I think I will have too.
So I'll go through each one and then I'll tell you the letter for it. I often worry that my partner will stop loving me. And that one is A. So if that feels mostly true for you, you put a tally next to A.
Yeah, and if it's not true at all?
You do nothing.
Oh, right, okay.
The next one. I find it easy to be affectionate with my partner, B. I fear that once someone gets to know the real me, they won't like who I am, A. I find that I bounce back quickly after a breakup. It's weird how I can just put someone out of my mind, C. When I'm not involved in a relationship, I feel somewhat anxious and incomplete, A. I find it difficult to emotionally support my partner when they are feeling down, C. When my partner is away, I am afraid that they might become interested in someone else. A. Are you getting any of these yet?
Yeah.
I can't see you writing, that's what it is.
No, go on.
The suspense. I feel comfortable depending on romantic partners. B. My independence is more important to me than my relationships. C. I prefer not to share my innermost feelings with my partner. C. When I show my partner how I feel, I am afraid they will not feel the same way about me. A. I am generally satisfied with my romantic relationships. B. I don't feel the need to act out much in my romantic relationships. B. I think about my relationships a lot. A. I find it difficult to depend on romantic partners. C. I tend to get very quickly attached to a romantic partner. A. I find little difficulty expressing my needs and wants to my partner. B. I sometimes feel angry or annoyed with my partner without knowing why. That's C. I am very sensitive to my partner's moods. A. I believe most people are essentially honest and dependable. B. I prefer casual sex with uncommitted partners to intimate sex with one person. C. I'm comfortable sharing my personal thoughts and feelings with my partner. B. We are at the halfway point. Have you got many tallies yet?
Okay, a few.
Good. I mean, this is one you've got to be honest with yourself. You know, I think I probably should have said that at the top, that there is not, before anyone's judging themselves, that there is not a bad type. They are different types. Some might feel more helpful than others, but no, there's not a bad attachment type. So we'll continue. I worry that if my partner leaves me, I might never find someone else. A. It makes me nervous when my partner gets too close. C. During a conflict, I tend to impulsively do or say things I later regret, rather than be able to reason about things. A. An argument with my partner doesn't usually cause me to question our entire relationship. B. My partner often wants me to be more intimate than I feel comfortable being. C. I worry that I'm not attractive enough. A. Sometimes people see me as boring because I create little drama in relationships. B. I miss my partner when we're apart, but when we're together, I feel the need to escape. C. When I disagree with someone, I feel comfortable expressing my opinions. B. I hate feeling that other people depend on me. C. If I notice that someone I'm interested in is checking out other people, I don't let it faze me. I might feel a pang of jealousy, but it's fleeting. B. If I notice that someone I'm interested in is checking out other people, I feel relieved. It means they're not looking to make things exclusive. C. If I notice that someone I'm interested in is checking out other people, it makes me feel depressed. A. If someone I've been dating begins to act cold and distant, I may wonder what's happened, but I'll know it's probably not about me. B. And the last page, last six now. If someone I've been dating begins to act cold and distant, I'll probably be indifferent. I might even be a bit relieved. C. If someone I've been dating begins to act cold and distant, I'll worry that I've done something wrong. A. If my partner was to break up with me, I'll try my best to show them what they are missing. A little jealousy can't hurt. That last bit's in brackets. I don't know if that's relevant. And that one is A. If someone I've been dating for several months tells me they want to stop seeing me, I'd feel hurt at first, but I'd get over it. B. Sometimes when I get what I want in a relationship, I'm not sure what I want anymore. C. I won't have much of a problem staying in touch with my ex, in brackets, strictly platonic. After all, we have a lot in common. B. So, that's the questions. So, like I probably should have said at the start, it's important to do them without judgment. As much as you can, try and be as honest as you can. And as long as they mostly fit for you, they don't have to be exactly the wording that might fit in your head. Certainly, reading those out, I find the wording to be a bit strange to read. And then basically from here, you tally up the number of checks you've got in columns A, B, and C. And then that will correspond to different attachment types. So Danielle, have you noticed a clear one for you?
100%, I'm a raving bee.
A raving bee? Okay.
Raving, absolutely.
Interesting. Do you mind me asking how many you got?
I got 12 Bs, 2 As and 1 C.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Very sure then. Cool. So you've got B. Mine is very much C. I got 14 yeah. C.
I thought you would be. I was thinking that as we were going on. I was thinking that's Bobby. I think Bobby would answer C to that.
If anything, I feel looking back at it, I may have been extra because some of these traits, when you read them, they don't feel entirely like, ooh, do I want to say yes to that one? But I think in the pursuit of trying to be really honest about it, I think there were some that I ticked where I was like a little bit on the fence, but I was like, I can be like that in certain situations, so I'll go for it.
And I think that's important to recognise that, like I said at the beginning, that it's, you take it, you know, with a pinch of salt, because we've all got a completely different frame of reference. I've been in a relationship for 20 years and other people are dating. Some people have had 10 relationships, 15 in that time, if not more. Some people might listening who might not even be 20 years old. So like it, your frame of reference can complete. So whether I'm a B and you're a C, our experiences will determine that. And I think maybe though for you and I, who are quite strong in one way, maybe that does say something, you know, maybe you can lean a bit more to kind of agreeing with it perhaps, because we're like, it's so blatant, the BB.
I think so. I feel that reading up on it, it makes a lot of sense for me, and I've had a lot of kind of realizations. So to share the different types then, the three types are anxious, secure and avoidant. And the kind of extra fourth type, if you will, is anxious avoidant. So some people, though not very many, are a combination of A and C.
Ah.
And so to give people an idea of what those mean, so people in the anxious attachment category, that is not the same as what we talk about a lot on our other podcasts in terms of anxiety as a mental health condition. This is anxiety specifically related to relationships, how comfortable you feel in them, around intimacy, around security in the relationship, around that person being consistent, how much you might read in or not read into things. And so, yes, absolutely, people can have an anxious relationship attachment type and also have anxiety, the mental health condition, but they're not the same. It's very important to distinguish that. People that have mostly got A, that's generally characterized more that you have insecurity in your relationships in terms of, will this continue? Will this person stick around? Will they change their mind around me? Maybe more focus on the relationship in terms of how much you analyze certain things, you know, a certain message they've given you. If they're off on a certain day with you, you might be more likely to wonder if that's something you've done, as opposed to, oh, maybe they're just having a bad day. So it's a level of analysis and focus and ultimately fear that the relationship is going to end, but more so that it's going to be your fault as opposed to maybe end for other reasons.
Right.
It's a weird thing to describe because I have to describe it somewhat vaguely because everyone's experience will be slightly different. But it's more that kind of direction of travel, if that makes sense. C is people that have an avoidant attachment style. So these are people like myself who really pride their independence very highly, can often tie their identity quite closely to their being self-reliant. And it can feel a bit like intimacy can be a bit of a threat to that, that if I get too close to somebody, you know, are they going to hurt me by abandoning me? Are they going to hurt me by having too much involvement in my emotions, lack of control on my part that could be a threat to my independence? That's very much what I identify with. And it's worth noting that doesn't mean you want to avoid relationships. It's the intimacy, the closeness, the healthy reliance, not codependency, the healthy reliance that can come in relationships can be a bit of a threat to you and something tricky to navigate. But equally, people that are avoidant often have really idealized ideas of relationships as well. So I have very grand ideas of what relationships could be like for me. And sometimes that can be a problem where I can be kind of too critical of someone or hold a very, very high standard for people. And so that's a big difference between anxious and avoidant. An anxiously attached person may be more likely to look for signs that the relationship is going to end or that they've done something wrong, whereas an avoidant person might be more likely to look for signs of, I'm right to not fully commit to this, or I've got to sort of keep a bit of distance from this for this reason, or, you know, this person's behaved in a certain way and that's a problem with them. Less likely to think, oh, that's a reflection of me doing something wrong. And then the remaining group is secure people. So they are characterized as being more, if somebody's having a bad day, they're more likely to come to the conclusion of they're having a bad day and approach it in a more kind of medium approach, as opposed to being like, have I done something wrong, or what's up with you, why are you being this way to me? And these are people that are less preoccupied with analyzing the relationship, less worried that it's going to end imminently, and also more comfortable with intimacy. And as the relationship evolves, they're happy to grow into it, whereas maybe an avoidant person might, as things get closer, feel a bit of a pang to pull away or try and find ways to still have autonomy.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I can completely get that and see that. And I think even though we've said, you know, it's all based on your experience, the fact that I've been in such a long-term relationship, you would like to think that I'd generally be quite secure in that. Otherwise, I don't know if we'd have made it maybe this long. But I think it's also really good because it does identify that if you're somebody that you're aware that you've been hurt quite a few times, that actually I do see myself like this, and actually it's time for me to try a different tactic maybe, because my experiences are determining the way that I'm approaching new relationships. I think that can be really helpful for people to kind of check themselves with. But yeah, I do often feel, you know, privileged and I guess lucky that, not that I've been in a relationship for this long, I'm not saying I'm lucky that I've been in a relationship, like being in a relationship is a great thing. It can be, and it can be great to be single, but I feel, I guess, quite lucky that I am quite open about my feelings and able to express myself without fear of what might happen if I do, whether that's opening up about you've pissed me off, we need to talk, or whether that's opening up about I love you, I'm really kind of feeling our vibe. Mm-hmm. I don't really worry about what I might get back from that. And I do feel quite lucky in that way, because I know that a lot of people don't live with that sense of maybe security, that ability to connect without worrying that the heart might get broken, you know. So yeah.
And it's so interesting to learn which one you were, because I wasn't sure. It's a lot more difficult to figure out what other people are, and I think particularly when someone like yourself is in a long-term relationship, even if you were one of the other types, that might be harder to tell as well, because some of the signs of it may not be as clear because of the security in that relationship. And that's why I'm quite glad you've mentioned about sort of people's past, because there's a lot of debate on where these attachment types come from. You know, some people are very much of the thinking, like the authors of this book actually, that it's kind of something that's evolved through our human species as like three different approaches to survival. So the idea that depending on the circumstances, one type might be more appropriate. So in a very dangerous environment, if you think, you know, way back prehistoric mm-hmm. man, if you're living in a place with loads of danger and predators, then actually being securely attached might be a problem, might be a hindrance. And actually being avoidant and having, you know, being keen to attach with people, but putting a high price on your independence as well, might be a way to kind of survive in that environment. In the same way, another approach to a stressful environment or a dangerous environment might be the anxious approach, where it's, I've got to really watch out for these people, watch out for danger, any threats to losing them. And that's how we survive as a unit. So it's kind of surviving as a unit versus surviving as an individual, and then secure being the kind of in-between place where it's an environment that's maybe safer. So that's one theory. There's also theories around this coming from childhood. There's theories around it being influenced by our past. But generally, there's a kind of broad agreement that you tend to stay one type once you are that type, in most cases. But then you can kind of go up and down in it. So someone like me, who's an avoidant type, if I was in a long-term relationship, that could quite influence me. And so some of the signs of my avoidance would go, and some of them would have to sort of be dampened down in order for me to fully commit to that relationship.
Yeah, I guess. And it's, and how much you lean to that, maybe that type, or lean into those behaviours, because we all go across all three at different points. But I really do think your experiences as potentially as a child from your family and your upbringing, and then your relationship experiences, will definitely determine the way that you behave maybe in relationships. There is some, I think, personal characteristics that potentially you're born with that will determine how you respond to your environment. So you and I could have the same environment growing up and have the same experiences, but we have got something that makes me unique to you and how I respond to those things. You know, because I always feel like the fact that I was brought up with my mum on her own gives me real strength And I feel like that makes me, I've always felt really independent, even within my relationship. None of my friends or Anthony would ever say you're needy or you've been in your relationship, like you don't want to let him go because, oh my God, it's all, you've got to be in a relationship. Like, I just don't have that vibe about my relationship at all. Like, it works. So while it works, we're cool. But yeah, I'm the one that's been with someone for 23 years.
But also that is in some way kind of typical of like the secure attachment mentality. It's considered to be quite proportional. Like, of course, you understand that a breakup can be really devastating, even in times when it might be a good breakup, you know, one that needs to happen, but you also understand that life will go on. And so, you know, that's kind of part of the sort of the reasoned mentality that's associated with that type. But yeah, it's really interesting, and I think it helps me kind of understand your relationship dynamic a bit better. And also it's helped me understand certain things with my history as well. There's a separate test you can take if you want to try and get an idea of what somebody else might be. But the thing that I would say is possibly the easiest way to tell from what I've been reading is how other people talk about relationships can be a really good indicator. So if you have someone like yourself who, even on the podcast, you're generally quite reasoned and you always try and be balanced, you might say something that sounds critical and you're like, do I entirely mean that? Maybe I don't. I'll also say this nice thing. You know, it's a very kind of reassuring, at least to me, way to that you talk about relationships. Whereas if you know somebody, and I certainly have been this person, where they're kind of complaining about, oh, you know, I'm just feeling a bit tied down, or I don't always understand what they want from me, or, you know, they're texting me a lot more than I can keep up with. These can, whilst not conclusive, they can be sort of signs of someone might be avoidant. Sometimes talking about feeling restricted, or I'm just not feeling independent, or, you know, I don't want to feel tied down, that kind of stuff. But also can be really quite obsessed with like finding the ideal relationship at the same time, in a way that can seem a little bit ironic, versus someone with an anxious attachment style might be, if you've got a friend where you think, oh, they're probably reading into this a little bit too much, that could be a bit of a sign. Or if they're looking for a lot of reassurance in their relationship, and if they can't get that, they then talk to you and they're like, oh, I'm really worried about this. It's going to be okay, right? You think that's not too bad, is it? That could be a sort of sign there. So that's one way you can potentially tell. And in thinking about this, I've been looking back at the relationships in my past, and I have found, as far as I can be confident, right, in this, as far as you can know about someone else, without exception, it seems to be that all of my male exes have also been avoidant, and all of my female exes have been anxious.
Oh, that's an interesting overview, isn't it? But that's made you think about things.
Indeed. And before anyone wonders, is that a gender thing? Not to that extent. Gender can play a part in these types, but never to that exclusivity. There's clearly something going on with me as well. And so that's been really interesting for me to think about. And it's actually helped me make sense of some of the things that have been unclear. You know, about a kind of what I would describe as a situationship that I was in for quite a few years, where it was all a bit vague and we never quite got it together, but there were a lot of romantic elements to it. And we were very close and cared about each other a lot. And it's quite clear that he was also an avoidant type. And out of all the types, the avoidant types are the least likely to actually end up together. It's not impossible, but it's clear looking back at that relationship, yes, we were both very keen to like always maintain our independence and our autonomy. You know, intimacy could be a bit difficult for us and that kind of thing. And so looking at it through this lens, what felt like an incredibly complicated relationship, and it was, this is an explanation where I'm like, this is making a lot of sense.
Yeah, you found that helpful.
Yeah, because we definitely did stay in that kind of vague place that maybe felt a little bit more comfortable, you know, not a threat to our independence, and allowed us, I think, crucially to hang on to that idealized idea, that idealized version, that if we got together, it could be this incredible, perfect thing. But neither of us quite wanted to spoil the dream of that.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that you should say that. And that's great if you found that quite helpful to be able to maybe just put some language or, you know, to what happened there and what you went through, because that relationship meant a lot to you over the time that you were in it. And, you know, you've had to work through quite a lot with that. So I think that's really nice and a real helpful thing that if you can kind of start thinking, perhaps that's where, what it was. Because I think even with me, I've just listened to myself a little bit talk. And it's interesting because I could come across quite, hopefully I didn't come across smug, but I've been in a relationship for a long time. And yeah, I'm quite secure. And yeah, I haven't really been hurt. Like I have been hurt in the relationship, but not like what I know hurt can be for a lot of people. However, a lot of people would say, well, you're not married. Like when you were saying some of the questions and when you talk about avoidance, like one thing I do not avoid is intimacy. Like I'm in this with you and we'll be intimate physically and emotionally. Like I want that, bring it on.
Mm-hmm.
However, my independence is my main thing. So Anthony and I have never lived together. I mean, we're in lockdown now and we live together. I lived with him for a little bit in London and I had my first child there for a couple of years. But for the whole of the rest of the time, we've both been away 3 or 4 days working away. He's got another house. I've got another house. Like, so all these years. So we've had the biggest question that we've had over the years from family and friends is, when are you two going to get married? Like, are you ever going to get married? You know, people get married after 3 years, 7 years, 10 years, you know, it's 23 years. And it's interesting because that's where maybe I feel like I would completely lose that. My independence gone then. I don't want to get married. And it's, I don't think I've ever actually said that out loud. I don't want to get married. I don't actually think I've ever said that out loud, but I know that if I did, he would have asked, if he'd have known that was my vibe, he would have asked me. He was brought up in marriage. He believes in marriage. So it's interesting when we think about it and I feel like, oh, I'm quite secure in my relationship and I don't feel that you need to be in one. I love being in it. I have done over the years, but I've never seen marriage. I don't know anyone who's married really. And so I don't, that frightens me because that to me means that's it. And I don't want that. That's so it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, we call it avoidance. And I might tick the B boxes because of my experience of this relationship. But on the other hand, there's something deeper going on for me that I don't want to commit to.
That's really interesting. And that's why, as much as there's three different types and the fourth category of people can be anxious avoidant, for all that there's only 3/4, there's so much nuance to it. And so you can say something like that and we could look at it as, oh, well, you know, you are very secure in what you have. And so you don't feel the need for marriage to feel secure. And that might be partly your attachment type and partly the long-term nature of the relationship. Or yeah, you could potentially look at it as, well, maybe there was some avoidance in your past. Maybe you would have ticked a lot more of those C boxes. But because you've been in this so long, that's influenced you.
Yeah. Maybe. And another argument could be that someone could say, you don't love him enough because if you did, you'd be married by now. You know, those romantics out there, you know, so that you're right. There's another side to it too, another point of view, I guess.
And also, it's obviously not the be all and end all. Plenty of people have incredibly happy relationships for their whole lives that marriage just don't factor as a part of. But yeah, certainly for me as a single person, this has been a really interesting exercise. And I mentioned dating a lot of avoidant men. And then I should also mention about dating a lot of women with an anxious attachment style. And that's also kind of clarified things, actually, where I've been in relationships where someone's had an issue with my independence. And that's partly about me maybe wanting to be more independent than is appropriate for the level of the relationship I was in. But equally, that might be a sign of the other side of it, where they want me to be there to kind of reassure those anxious feelings more than maybe is appropriate for the level of the relationship as well. And so that's why in the book it refers to this idea of like the anxious avoidant trap, because you can be coming from such different perspectives that can be really tricky if it's these two together. Not impossible, but there can be certain things where you have to find ways to both quash certain things that are coming up for you or talk things through in order to find maybe more middle ground.
That's interesting. But what about the gender thing then? Like, that's quite a clear gender difference or gap. And you think that's purely a coincidence? Or do you think that from your experience, gender has got something to do with that?
Ooh, okay, good question. I don't think it's a coincidence. I would say it's more a pattern. I think at some point I've got into a pattern of the men I date are avoidant, the women I date are the anxious type.
Right.
I think that's where it's coming from. So I'm repeating that And it just so happens the people that maybe I'm used to being in relationships with and therefore sort of more likely to pop up on my radar have those similarities. Yeah. And there's a gender split there. Because I think that often happens, you know, when I talk to other people that date people of multiple genders, there can be those kind of things. And then they're like, OK, well, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean that I only like women of a certain, what, you know, if I think of like a friend of mine that only dated women with glasses and none of the men they dated had glasses. And I remember they were fully like, I noticed that and they were like, that's so weird. I've never thought about it. That's the level of sometimes I analyze things. And we didn't really think it was anything, but you could make a bit of an argument of maybe they were used to dating women with glasses. They were used to spending a lot of time around people being like, they're attractive, that's attractive to me, getting very used to a particular look perhaps. And so maybe that was something that carried on as a bit of a pattern, or maybe not. But particularly because attachment types can be such a big thing, maybe that's an easier pattern to kind of get into. And to be fair, one last thing I will mention, if people are noticing a pattern of when they start looking back at their own relationships, and I'll put a link to the book in the episode description if you want to go read up on this further. It's really fascinating to me. I can't help but start applying it all over my life at the moment. But if you're finding when you look into it that you've got a history of dating avoidant people, one thing that's worth saying about that is we tend to be very present within the dating pool because we tend to be less risk averse and quite happy to sort of go out there and date. We are independent as a big part of how we see ourselves. Dating around is something that can feel quite compatible with that. And saying, you know, okay, let's try out our options. Let's see what's going on. And so the dating pool can be quite flooded with avoidant people. We are also less likely to be in relationships as well. And so we are, yeah, we're very out here. And it's interesting talking to a lot of the comedians as well. I am noticing a bit of a trend of the single guests that I speak to seem to be more that type. And particularly if you heard Shalewa's episode, I would say we have that in common. I noticed a lot of similarities with her where she really is an independent person. She likes her own space. She likes making her own decisions. And she's very open to like, okay, sure, this guy that tapped me on the back while I was walking down the street, yeah, I'll go on a date with him. And maybe some people wouldn't. And that can be a personality thing, but it can be a little bit, we're quite happy to play the field and see what happens. Yeah. And then equally, she's very good at that. But then when it comes to committing to a relationship, that's a bit where it gets a bit tricky, or she finds herself finding faults in somebody. And that can be a bit of a distancing strategy unconsciously. Yeah. But then equally, she described being really romantic and having really idealist ideas that people struggle to kind of meet. And people can find her a bit standoffish. And all of this can sort of be viewed in this way of, within these models, it's quite clear to me she's more in that direction, if I was to pick one. And maybe that's part of the reason why I connected with her so strongly, and the listeners will hear me giggling along the whole episode.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can imagine that's for you, like you said, having had read this information and feeling quite connected to it with anything, all the personality stuff that I've done over the years in my work, you do start putting it out there with like your family and friends and people that you work with, and you think, oh, I think, you know, do you fall into that category, and you fall more into that category. And actually, I believe it to be, in traditional psychology, so helpful in some ways, but you have to be a well-positioned and balanced person to maybe benefit from it helpfully. Because you can go down a wrong path with it, and you can start putting people in boxes. And we know that we do not like labels at all. Well, I don't say that, because we do kind of dig some labels and think there's some positivity sometimes. But in general, we're just not labely people. We've got the box wide open. So there is a danger of that.
Some people think that's a euphemism. Is your box wide open?
Yeah, I know. God, I won't say it. I could say so much, and I'm just not going to. But yeah, I think, and also other people then who don't have wide open boxes. Some people who don't buy into this stuff or aren't open to it don't like being told, having these kind of discussions about you potentially fall into this category at all. So I think, yeah, you have to be careful with how you use it to make it be quite useful or not, you know.
Well, no, that's a great point. And actually, that's why I was kind of keen to say earlier that there isn't considered a bad one of these. You know, that the language actually can be a bit unhelpful, you know, anxious, avoidant, secure. You can automatically jump to which one you think you should be, but actually they all have their advantages and disadvantages. And it's about kind of recognizing that. But I think you're right that for me, having had a lot of counseling and getting to know myself very well and my counselor helping me judge myself less means that I'm a lot more open to being like, yep, avoidant, sure, that seems accurate, and I'm not going to judge myself for it. But equally, I can look at my progress, because definitely I would have ticked even more boxes only a few years ago. You know, I would have actually, if I'm really honest, been someone quite difficult to get into a relationship with far more. Now, I wouldn't say that's the case. We all have our quirks. I definitely have mine, but I wouldn't say I'm avoidant to anything like the extent I would have been, even though elements of this are still here, and it's good for me to be aware of them. So so interesting.
That's
stuff.
That's a lovely way to put it, yeah.
And if you want one example of how they're all different, they all have their pros and cons, secure people can be stereotyped as quite boring.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, yeah, well, no, thank you, thanks for that. No, but I was going to say there could be a naivety as well that comes with that. Yeah, boring, happy to just carry on and not really venture out. 100%, like, there's pros and cons to both, because you aren't somebody that I would say would avoid a relationship by any means. Like, I think that if somebody came along that was right, like, you'd be really up for it and probably go more gung-ho than what I think I might be if I was single. But yet there may be some elements of that that you might still avoid that pop up for you. And also, when you spoke about the guest about this, when you have been in multiple potentially relationships, or you've had multiple dates, or you've, you know, seen different people from different backgrounds, and you've had much more experience, let's say, romantically in the world, you're bound to have different views. You're, you know, you're bound to be, it's easy for me to say, like, oh, I'd be up for this, or I'd be up for that. How the hell do I know? How do I know, as an adult woman, you know, when I met my guy at 18, like, I think I'm quite worldly because I read and I engage with lots of different people, but I haven't put myself in those situations to really know how I'd handle that. But it just gives you maybe a little bit of food for thought, I guess.
Yeah, definitely a lot of food for thought for me. And it's interesting, particularly noticing, yeah, the patterns, also which kind of types, you know, interact with each other. You know, I mentioned the anxious avoidant trap. That's one that's quite common. And part of it is considered that in a way they can kind of justify each other's belief systems. So if I'm with somebody that's anxious, they might come across to me as a bit clingy by comparison to how I am. And so that might back up the, oh, it's good to be independent because I'm not so keen on this behaviour. I like my version of it. And they may look at me and be like, no, I'm right to be really trying to keeping an eye on the relationship and worrying about whether he's going to walk away because he's so independent. And at times he's not as close to me as I need him to be. So, you know, he needs to get more like how I see things. And so in a way,
or not, he's not right for me, you know?
Yeah, but that's considered one of the reasons why sometimes these types can get kind of magnetized, because you kind of reinforce each other's viewpoints, which is so interesting. So, yeah, so we should wrap up talking about it for now. But I'm glad that we had a bit of a deep dive on it. Hopefully the listeners got a chance to go through which type they are. Do send me a DM. I'd be really interested to see if there's any kind of trend in our listenership. You know, like I said, there's a lot of avoidant people out in the dating pool. I wonder if that parallels in our listenership. So, yeah, at Bobby Temps. The links are in the description for the book. And also if you want to DM me and
maybe we can go on a date and, you know, hang out and see if our types match. No, I'm Bobby's looking at music today. Do not tell our listeners to DM me and ask me out on a date, Dan. Just get lost. I'm only joking.
To be fair, earlier in the conversation, I did say that I'm not talking to new people. So I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe now's not the best time to hit me up in that way, but if you want to tell me what attachment type you are, I'd be very interested to get that feedback. Also, some of my friends that listen, I'm expecting text messages, and I'm glad that we've gone on a deep dive, because I will probably be thinking about it a lot more in the interviews, so it might come up with some of the guests. We shall see. I'll certainly be behind the scenes wondering which type they are and if I can work it out.
And I want to say before we go on that if we weren't at the end of our episode and our recording and we weren't so focused on our topic today, you've mentioned a couple of times that I want you to know, it hasn't gone over my head, that I'm not talking to anyone new at the moment. My next question, especially off air, would be why. And I reckon a lot of our listeners are thinking, wonder why Bobby's not talking to anyone new at the moment.
Is it because he's avoidant?
Yeah, there you go. So we might just save that and park that and see if the next time we have our host episode, whether that's still the case. We'll park it and we'll see next time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Challenge accepted. All right. Cool. So that's everything for now. Thank you, as always, for listening. We are currently featured on Apple Podcasts for the first time with this show, which is very exciting. So welcome, welcome, if you found us that way. And if you are new or not, please do consider leaving us a review. It helps more people find the show. We love the feedback. And at some point, we're going to start reading reviews when we have enough of them. And so if you're up for leaving us a 5-star, you can write whatever you want and we will read it. So if you want the airtime and to say something mean, then a 5-star and a mean comment is the way to go. And we'll really confuse the Apple team with some of these reviews.
That's hilarious.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you for listening as always. Thank you, Danielle, for being your wonderful self. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.